Buddha once said that all he taught was suffering or stress. The word is dukkha, and the end of suffering. Now, where do we experience that? It's in a part of us that no one else can touch, no one else can experience. Each of us has our own sufferings. And we can see other people suffering, and that can have an effect on us. But again, it has an effect on us if we let it, if we have a sympathetic reaction. So again, it's our choice as to whether we want to let that suffering in. The end of suffering is also experienced right here, and the path is something we develop, again, in the same part of our awareness, the part that nobody else can know. Like those questionnaires they have about people's level of happiness. They think they've learned something if they can pin it down that Denmark has a 8.4. Poland has a 6.7, something like that. But again, it's all very subjective. When you say, how does this, your level of happiness rate on a 1 to 10? What is there about happiness you can measure? And then how can you take your 1 to 10 and measure it against somebody else's 1 to 10? This is where we run up against something really important, which is that the problem is inside. And other people's problems are inside themselves. We can offer advice, we can try to help them in various ways, but the ultimate problem of how much each of us is suffering is something that depends on our own level of skill. Which is why this is a path that each of us has to follow for him or herself. But it's not a selfish path. Because you think about people you've known and loved, that you see suffering, and they get to a point where you can't reach into them. Nothing you can do to help. It's very frustrating. And it gives you a very strong sense of how independent we are. And there's a chasm that you can't cross. If other people see us suffering, it's going to be hard for them, too. They sympathize, but they can't get across that chasm. So as we learn how to take care of ourselves this way, it means we're going to be much less of a burden on other people. So our work here is not selfish work. And the more we get results, the more we're able to offer advice to other people, which is the best thing we can do. Because your motivation, your views, your intentions, these are things that you generate yourself. And the same applies to other people. They generate their own. And you can push and nudge and try to help them here. But again, they can resist that if they want to. And then they get sometimes so deeply involved in their own suffering that they can't even pay attention, whether even when they want to pay attention. So you have to work on what you're responsible for. And you can hope that the good energy that comes from that, the insights that come from that, can be spread out. But your first priority is what you're doing right here, right now. As you meditate, you're working on three qualities. There's alertness, seeing what you're doing, the results of what you're doing. Notice that it's these activities of the mind that you're looking at. It's not that you're just openly aware to everything that's coming through in the present. You want to focus specifically on what you're doing and the results. This is a teaching on action. Meditation is about action, the actions of the mind. And you have a purpose. This is what ardency is for. Includes your motivation, your desire. This is where desire is a good thing. Your desire to do this skillfully. And then there's mindfulness, which is your ability to remember, to keep something in mind. As the mind gets more quiet, you have better access to lessons you've learned from the past that you might apply right now. So apply them to staying with the breath. Everything else you can put aside right now. How do you get your mind to settle down right here? Because if the mind is going to have any measure of success in this path, it has to get under control. So you give it something to do and you stick with it. And you keep watch to see when it's going to start slipping off. It has its telltale signs. There's a slight loosening in your concentration, or there's a little bit of questioning or antsiness. And sometimes the decision to leave is made before you actually leave on an underground level. And you want to be alert for that. If you catch the mind loosening up like that, well, try to breathe in a way that's really comfortable so the mind gets more interested again. Or do new things with the breath. Think of the breath coming in different parts of the body that you don't normally think of it. If there's a pain in a particular part of the body, you may want to see what the breath can do for the pain. If you know that one of your organs is malfunctioning, see if you can direct a little extra good, healthy breath energy there. In other words, give the mind something to do in the present moment that keeps its interest up. At the same time, you're making the body a more pleasant place to stay, so it's easier to settle down and to stay settled down snugly when you've done the basic clearing out work. And John Lee makes a connection between these three qualities and then the factors of getting the mind into jhana. The jhana factors have a list of five: directed thought, evaluation, singleness of preoccupation, pleasure, and rapture. As he pointed out, the pleasure and rapture are the results. You want to focus on those first three because, again, those are things you do. Directed thought relates to your mindfulness. You're remembering to stay right with one thing. Evaluation deals with the ardency, trying to make this a good, comfortable place to stay and doing what you can. If you find that things are difficult, there are parts of the body that may not seem to want to open up, breath channels that may seem blocked. What can you do to work around those blockages? What can you do so those parts of the body that seem tight and constricted will trust you enough so they'll open up? They're kind of like wild animals. If you stare at a wild animal, it'll run away. If you glance off to the side and thinks you're not noticing it, it'll just stay right there. You can actually observe it through the corner of your eye. You might want to try that approach. If there's areas of tightness in your throat, in your chest, don't focus straight in on them. Focus off to the side of it. Let the breath energy gradually, gradually, gradually work around. That's evaluation. And then your alertness, when it's really steady, develops into singleness of preoccupation. You're with one thing and you watch that one thing. So this is how mindfulness practice, which those first three qualities come from, melds into concentration practice. When everything comes together, then the pleasure and the rapture are right there. Rapture may be too strong a word, maybe refreshment sometimes. Although sometimes if the body is really starved for energy, you'll find that as you get more snugly together with your object, that the sense of being refreshed gets really, really strong. But again, that'll vary from session to session. What's important in this kind of practice is you've got tranquility and insight working together. Then tranquility is the directed thought, singleness of preoccupation. The insight comes from the evaluation, which, remember, is related to the ardency. This is another one of John Lee's insights is that the wisdom faculty in all this comes from your desire to do it well. Wisdom is not just knowing the names for things or being able to analyze things. You're trying to understand things through doing, through doing things skillfully. This is why the Buddha talked about the level of understanding that comes not just from listening or from thinking, but it comes from actually developing qualities of the mind. Your desire to do this well is the beginning of wisdom. And as you learn how to do it with more and more skill, that's when your wisdom and discernment start to show their results. This is why one of Ajahn Lee's favorite types of imagery has to do with skills, the skills of weaving a basket, carpentry, sewing things, making tiles, taking silver and making objects out of the silver. It's in the doing that you learn. And as you do these things, you learn about the qualities of mind that shape your experience in general. It's what the Buddha calls fabrication. Bodily fabrication is the breath. Verbal fabrication is that direct of thought and evaluation. Mental fabrication are the feelings and perceptions. The perception here would be the perception, the mental image you hold of the breath. You can try playing with that. And then you give rise to feelings of well-being. If you don't, well, you have feelings of dis-ease. But what do you do to turn those areas of dis-ease into ease? That's what the ardency and the evaluation are for. And as you learn how to shape a state of concentration, you begin to become more and more sensitive to how you shape things throughout the rest of the day. You realize you're not here simply passively taking things in and then reacting. You're proactive. And you want to be sensitive to how you're shaping things so you can do it skillfully. So all of these things come together so that you can shape this part of your experience that you experience and nobody else can see or know or touch. And you learn how to approach this part of the experience from within. The problem lies within, the solution lies within as well. Buddha wasn't the sort of person to say, well, the reason you're suffering is because there's a chemical imbalance in your body, so we work with the chemistry. Or you're suffering because society is one way or another. I mean, those things can contribute to the way you make yourself suffer. But the real issue is your skill in approaching consciousness from within. Approaching your experience from within. And when you learn how to do that well, then you've taken care of what you're responsible for. And this part of your awareness then no longer becomes a source of worry for other people. And when you see someone else suffering, you'll have real knowledge to offer them, knowledge that you've learned from the doing. You can give them advice on how they do this too. That's the best gift you can give.